following is a live LV Rocks original webcast. Visit LVRocks.com for studio cam and live chat room.
To Subject to Discussion, I'm Sean O'Mac, and welcome you back to the program for every Wednesday night, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on LVRocks.com, originating from the lovely Sin City, Las Vegas, in the garden spot of Las Vegas, I must tell you. It smells like a garden out there today. It smells like the outhouse out back, but it's all right. And in just a few minutes, we'll be joined by Marianne T. Beverly. She's the web mistress for Edward James Olmos and also a prolific author in her own right. She wrote a book called The Lion, in which I have right here. I have 200 pages of it. I think I didn't get the last section there, thanks to America Online, I guess. But it's about Ahmed Shah Massoud, who is a famous military man or a person over in Afghanistan who tried to liberate Afghanistan from the Taliban. So she'll be joining us in just a few minutes. And right now I'm just going to go run through the news just a little bit before she comes on. And first of all, today I thought it was interesting watching the Centers for Disease Control show up on the news saying they're scrambling to destroy a flu strain. This is from the Associated Press from Geneva. Countries around the world were destroying vials of a nearly 50-year-old killer flu virus Wednesday, and that were sent to thousands of labs as part of a routine test kit, raising fears of a global pandemic. Now, why, if that's the case, what the hell were they doing sending that flu virus out to begin with? Sometimes these scientists make you shake your heads and wonder why. The World Health Organization said Canada, South Korea, Hong Kong, and Singapore had already destroyed their samples, while Japan was doing the same. Taiwan and Germany also announced they had destroyed all of their vials. Nearly 5,000 labs in 18 countries or territories, mostly in the United States, there you go, received vials from a U.S. company that supplies kits used for internal quality control tests. News that the vials had been sent to labs was first reported by the Associated Press. The germ, the 1957 H2N2, it's like R2D2, I guess, but for the flu virus of droids, I guess, the Asian flu strain killed between 1 and 4 million people and has not been included in the flu vaccine since 1968. Anyone born after that date has little or no immunity to it. Uh-oh, I'm 2 years out of that one, so I probably have it right now because I've been struggling with the flu or cold or whatever since for the last 3 weeks now. So, I mean, what were they doing sending it out to begin with? If it was that bad of a flu virus, they should have not sent it out and destroyed it years ago. I mean, I understand why they sit on all these. They got smallpox they're sitting on, and they just destroy all this stuff. Why do we need this stuff sitting around in vials? You know, boggles the mind. And then yesterday we had three were charged in a plot against U.S. finance centers. This is from Mark Sherman, also from the Associated Press. And three men with suspected al-Qaeda ties already in British custody were charged Tuesday with a years-long plot to attack the New York Stock Exchange and other East Coast financial institutions. A four-count indictment turned by a New York City grand jury alleges the men, all British citizens, visited and conducted surveillance of the buildings and strong neighborhoods between August 2000 and April 2001. So that just proves that, you know, the terrorism's still out there, and we got to be concentrating on the root of us, and not root of terrorism, not getting wandered off in some kind of a quandary over in Iraq, I think. But the plot was foiled when Pakistani investigators seized a computer with information from the surveillance. British authorities were alerted and arrested eight men, including the three suspects on terrorism charges last August, Deputy Attorney General James B. Comey said. So, well, there you go right there. And it was the Pakistani intelligence community that actually dug that out. Not, as we've been led to believe, in watching the news, they seem to be saying that the United States intelligence community sniffed that out. And President Bush is hopeful on Social Security bill this year. This is from Monday. Aboard Air Force One, President Bush said that he hoped Congress would pass Social Security legislation this year, adding lawmakers could face voter backlash if they failed to address the retirement program's financial problems. And, well, I mean, first of all, what is his plan? You know, you want to reform it, fine, but where is your plan, President Bush? I mean, he's yapping at the Democrat, they don't have a plan. Well, hello, where's yours? I mean, I haven't seen any plan of his. It flowed out that, be some privatization of the Social Security accounts, but what? What exactly is your plan? I mean, they float these things out, and what's the plan? You know, how are we going to agree to it unless we know what the plan is? And so we'll see what happens. My opinion on the Social Security thing is it's going to add trillions of dollars to the debt. Let's pay down the debt we have now before we go off and add debt from fixing the Social Security. Let's pay this down now, what we have down first, before we go adding to it with the Social Security reform. Various reports says over 2041 the trust fund. Well, we got 2041 the trust fund will be exhausted. So this is 2005. We got 36 years. So why can't we pay down this debt we have right now, as I said before, and then fix Social Security? I mean, why are we going to pile on more debt for our children and our grandchildren to pay off? I mean, it does that make too much sense? I don't know. It must. President Bush is to offer details on Social Security plan. Hallelujah. This is from Tuesday, yesterday. President Bush needs to offer more specifics to have any chance to win passage this year of his plan to restructure the Social Security retirement program. Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, a proponent of the Bush's proposal, individual Social Security investment accounts, said the president must offer details about how best to fix the program's financial problems and insist on a vote in coming months. There you go. Well, it's about time that some of these Republicans start standing up. And where is your plan, President Bush? I mean, you're barking that there's a problem. What's your plan to fix it? And let's see here. And we have the Senate committee delays vote on Bolton. A Senate committee delayed until next week a vote on John R. Bolton to be U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. Have Democrats asked for more time. I watched some of that hearing yesterday and the day before with Boxer and all them, letting him have it over some of his views he has. One of his views was he believed that the first 10 floors of United Nations, the top 10 floors of the United Nations building was knocked off and nobody would miss it. And some of it, he looks like the guy Speedy Delivery from Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. So now we have Mr. Speedy Delivery going to be the ambassador to the UN from the United States. So we got him. We got Rudy Giuliani, the bad accountant with the bad comb over, and we got Mr. Belding, the governor of New York, Pataki. So we got all these different TV characters showing up now, and so we'll see what happens with Bolton and. House panel okays a slimmed down energy bill. Oh, hallelujah. Gas is almost $3 a gallon here. It's about time they discover there's a problem. House tax writers advanced an $8 billion package of energy tax breaks Wednesday. I don't think we're getting a tax break. I think it's aimed at these corporations. Aimed at spurring construction of electricity transmission lines in hopes of reducing the likelihood of future blackouts. The tax provisions, many of which would help energy companies, there you go, Enron, hello, will be merged with non-tax energy proposals being crafted by two other committees into a broad bill expected to be considered by the full House next week. So there we go. We're not going to get any help. Now, if you've done a search on the Internet about the gas tax, here in Nevada, Nevada's gas tax is 23 cents, and the federal gas tax is 18 cents. Put those two together, and you got 41 cents in gas tax. With the stroke of a pen, Bush, and in our case, our governor, Gwynn, can temporarily or permanently get rid of that tax. They'll drop the gas down 41 cents a gallon. That'll help a lot. But, oh, no, we can't do that. So we can't help the poor middle class. Oh, no, we got to just give tax break to these companies. They can build more transmission lines. And while we're all, having to push our cars or get a horse. Tom DeLay urges the GOP to blame Democrats over his ethics problem. House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, hoping to hold support among fellow Republicans, urged GOP senators Tuesday to blame Democrats if asked about his ethics controversy and accused the news media of twisting supportive comments so they sounded like criticisms. He recommended senators respond to questions by saying Democrats have no agenda other than partisanship and attacking him to prevent Republicans from accomplishing their legislative program. Well, I mean, he was all over that Schiavo mess, threatening the judges and for doing their jobs by following the law. I mean, for crying out loud, what are these judges supposed to do? I mean, they're checks and balances. The three equal branches of government, judges are following the letter of the law. They're not supposed to be knee-jerk about emotional issues like that Schiavo mess was. And what else? Congressional Democrats move to exploit schisms in the GOP ranks. Well, we knew this was coming because they are GOP is a little bit in tatters a little bit, and you can't blame the Democrats for trying to jump on it. And they're going to orchestrate a campaign to a fever pitch today with a joint House Senate news conference and talk radio appearances by half a dozen Democratic senators. Oh, where's Ted Kennedy on my show here? Is he called in yet? No? No, Ted Kennedy? Okay. And Senate Democratic leader Harry Reid, Pinky as they call him here, his nickname is Pinky, has begun to distinguish between responsible and irresponsible Republicans in an attempt to take partisan bite out of the Democrats' message and exploit Republican schisms. So Ira, as much as I follow the, I've been trying to be a little bit of a Democrat here, I really don't like Harry Reid, so we'll just move on along here. The White House is supportive of embattled Tom DeLay. President Bush considers House Majority Leader Tom DeLay a friend and hopes to keep working with him, White House spokesman Scott McClellan said today. The president looks forward to continuing to work closely with the Majority Leader to get things done on behalf of the American people. Okay. Christopher Shays, congressman from Connecticut, has called on DeLay to resign from his leadership position. And Senator Rick Santorum of Pennsylvania, the number three Republican in the Senate, has said DeLay needs to answer his questions about his ethics, all about trips to Russia and a political action committee that's paying his wife and his daughter. And what else? Well, Marianne's coming. She'll be just in a couple of minutes here. We got about 3-4 minutes before she calls in. Negroponte vows spying a revamp an unvarnished truth. He's going to be the intelligence czar. John Negroponte, former Iraq ambassador. And his punchline is he believes in calling things the way he sees them, and he believes the president deserves from his director of national intelligence and from the intelligence community unvarnished truth. So let's hope so. The new intelligence czar created last year in response to the recommendations of the 9/11 commission will serve as Bush's top intelligence advisor and lead to 15 agencies that make up the sprawling U.S. intelligence community. Again, I remember what happened in Israel when they did that, and they had a surprise attack upon them by, I think it was Jordan and Egypt. So be careful what you wish for. Senators may have blown cover of CIA agent. During questioning of John Bolton's nomination hearings, Richard Lugar and John Kerry both mentioned a name, Fulton Armstrong, that had not previously come up in public accounts of the intelligence flap. In questioning Bolton, Kerry read from a transcript of closed-door interviews that committee staffers conducted with State Department officials prior to Monday's hearing. Otto Reich, blah, blah, blah. And, both of them, Lugar and Kerry, threw out the name of Fulton Armstrong. So we're led to believe that this agent, instead of referring to him as Mr. Smith, as they agreed to, they call him as Fulton Armstrong. So they kind of, it's not very good. We have a senator's blowing CIA agent's covers. And they had that nut outside the Capitol. It was captured trying to go see the president. He's at the wrong building, obviously, with two suitcases. And let's see. What else? And 10 years and $10 billion later, the COPS program is drawing scrutiny. That's the 100,000 more COPS initiative that Clinton started. Some municipalities have taken some of the money meant for the COPS program and are falling into other programs and not COPS, like shoring up holes in their budget and other things. And you probably needed some kind of auditor or some kind of overseer of that to make sure the money was being spent on COPS, not spent on plugging holes in cities' budgets. But crime rate did fall during that time, so they should get some credit. And Bill Clinton, President Clinton, bashes man behind Stop Hillary Push. Former President Clinton took an aim Monday at a powerful political opponent as his wife, saying that a surge of Stop Hillary efforts can't stop her. There's a man called Arthur Finkelstein. Reported Finkelstein has worked to elect several strongly conservative Republican politicians, married his male partner in a civil ceremony in Massachusetts in December. The Republican Party opposes same-sex marriages. So Clinton's trying to say that maybe he's got some kind of self-loathing or why he's so visceral in his attack against Hillary. So I don't know. I think he should stay out of it. If she's going to run for president, she's got to stand up on her own and not have her husband do her fighting for her. So, and West Virginia officials going to challenge Robert Byrd, Senator Robert Byrd from West Virginia, for his Senate seat. Hiram Lewis, who served in Kuwait and Iraq, and he's not a personal vendetta. He's saying it's time for a change. He's 34 years old and is the first Republican to declare against the 87-year-old Robert Byrd. So that would be interesting. I can't see them voting him out. He's been there for 100 years. I think he's like now the longest-serving senator since Strom Thurmond passed away. So, And what else here? Just a couple more M's, and she should be calling in a minute. Disgraced Cardinal leads Mass for the Pope. Cardinal breaking the law, Bernard Law, actually, whose failures to stop sexually abusive priests sparked the worst crisis in American church history, led a Mass for thousands mourning Pope John Paul II at St. Peter's Basilica on Monday after police whisked away a victim protesting outside. There's a lady, her name is Barbara Blaine. She's from Chicago, and she went there to protest because Law. Some Catholics said seeing the cardinal presiding over Mass at one of the most significant sites for their faith was another sign that the Vatican did not understand the betrayal parishioners felt when he protected guilty priests. And yeah, I mean, I don't understand this, how they reward him. I mean, shouldn't he have been charged with an accessory to rape or accessory for pedophilia? I mean, he kept moving these priests around from church to church to church, and they kept doing what they were doing, sexually abusing choir boys and women, because this woman that was over him, Barbara Blaine, that's a woman. And I just think nonsense. Yeah, they paid, that bus and our Jason's paid over $86 million in settlements over that sexual abuse stuff. So, and as much as I feel sorry for the Pope and everything that died, and he died, I don't think Bernard Law should have been allowed anywhere near the public spotlight during this, because the Catholic Church is having enough problems raising money, and especially in the United States, there's the enrollment of people trying to go into the seminary has dropped. The amount of nuns have dropped. And here they are, they trot out Bernard Law to lead Mass in Rome. I mean, did they think that they wouldn't be televised? I don't know. But I think they should have known better. I mean, they can't blame innocence, because they've been able to coordinate this coverage of the Pope dying pretty darn well. And now, we're just, we don't know. We don't know anything about this Bernard Law business. But, BS. And judge orders Stewart to serve her sentence. Martha, this is earth-shattering. I'm going to break in special news coverage of this. Martha Stewart is going to serve her full 5 months of house arrest. Brushing aside claims from the celebrity homemaker that the sentence is damaging her business. Homemaking Maven had told the judge that serving the rest of her sentence would hamper production of her two TV series, a daytime talk show and new rendition of NBC's The Apprentice. I don't think Martha Stewart should have been put in jail at all. I mean, she was found guilty. Instead of putting somebody like that in jail, they should have hit her where it hurts. Hit her in the wallet. I would have fined her $20 million, and then let her go about her business. Putting somebody like that in prison is not going to do nothing but make her more money. And look, she's richer now than when she went into office. So that's just my opinion, that they should have just hit her in the wallet. And the biggest news, rock the world, is Britney Spears is pregnant. She announced it on her website. I don't think I might be the father. No. Yeah. She's like, well, they say she's like a doorknob. Everybody's had their turn. I don't know. Britney Spears reveals she might be Hollywood's worst kept secret. She's pregnant and posting on her website that she told that her and her husband were expecting their first child together. This would be Spears' first foray into parenthood. Federline, 27, has two children from his ex-girlfriend. There you go. And Spears and Federline met when she was a backup. He was a backup dancer on her tour, and Jackson was pregnant with their son. That's just lovely, 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 lovely. And is Marianne there? Oh, okay. And we'll be joined by Marianne T. Beverly. Marianne, you there?
I am, Sean.
Hi. Ah, fine. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Okay. And this is Marianne T. Beverly. She's the prolific author and also the webmistress of Edward James Olmos. Correct.
Yes, indeed.
So, well, can you hear me all right?
Barely.
Oh. Well, I'll talk a little louder. How's that?
Okay.
All right. And you wrote a book. I got your book. Excellent. I mean, I've been reading through it. It's a big book. How many pages is it total?
Getting close to 400, I think.
Oh, you're still writing it, huh?
Well, it depends on the font,
okay.
Just changing things around.
Okay. Now, am I pronouncing his name? It's Ahmed Shah Massoud, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, give the listeners who are not quite familiar who he is, who he was. I'm sorry, he passed away, correct?
Yeah, he was assassinated reportedly on the orders of Osama bin Laden 2 days before the 9/11 attack on this country.
Hmm. And then he was a freedom fighter, right? He's trying to free...
He was. He started out fighting against the Soviets when they invaded Afghanistan, and he stayed on to fight the Taliban and Al-Qaeda.
And he was a major thorn in the Soviet side during their occupation, correct?
He was. Yeah. The Wall Street Journal said that he was the Afghan who ended the Cold War. When I was doing research for the book, I read a lot of material about the Soviet invasion, and one of the stories in one of the books was that the Soviets were saying, well, The only reason he could defeat them was because he had been through a Soviet military camp and they had trained him, and that's why he was so good at what he did. But
really?
he was an extraordinary guerrilla fighter.
Wow. Yeah. So he was in a Russian military camp. So he learned.
He wasn't. Oh. They just said that he was because they couldn't explain why he kept beating them at every turn.
Well, it seems like he's a very intelligent man. I mean, he loved his country. He gave up quite a bit to try and free his country from the grips of the Soviets. Correct.
He gave up
everything
for his country. He was only a college student when the Soviets invaded. Hmm. His father had been was a military officer in King Zahir Shah's army, and the king went on vacation and was deposed by his own cousin, who then established a communist government in Afghanistan. And the Soviets came in to help support this new communist government. Of course, his father, being a loyalist to the king, was very much against this new government, and the young Massoud followed his father and became very political and very anti-Soviet. So he went to Pakistan and spent some time there being trained by what is today the ISI as a saboteur. But he was very independent and very pro-Afghan and believed that Pakistan had its own agenda for Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. So he took what help they would give him, but he really set up a fortress in the Panjshir Valley and gave the Soviets absolute fits, because they, no matter what they did, they could not bring this one man down.
Now that valley, it's the mountains and the hills we've seen on TV. That's where Osama bin Laden has been supposedly hiding in, right?
Well, bin Laden, they think, was a little bit west of that in Tora Bora, but the Hindu Kush run all through that northern terrain, North Afghanistan, and it's a terrific and horrific terrain to try to do anything.
Yeah. Huh. And then now, and in your book now, he's a major character, and a lady, the reporter, Miss Garrett, right? And she comes in, and now, women. He was surprised to see her show up at his camp, right? And she risked life and limb to come. She risked life and limb to come see him, correct?
Yes. And now remember, the story is even though I did a lot of research and it's based in history, I did fictionalize it.
Yeah.
But Massoud, when we think of Afghanistan, even today, we think of women being oppressed and women in burqas and women not having any rights. And this was something that Massoud spoke about very loudly because it was something he did not understand. Mm-hmm. He was very moderate, and he, in the late 1990s, he actually signed a women's bill of rights for the women of Afghanistan.
Wow. Back in, what year was it, 1989?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it was.
He said that women had, he didn't understand the Taliban. He didn't understand where they got the crazy ideas they did. He said that women had the right to be a part of everything that affected their life, whether it was education or politics or religion or law. And so he supported women's rights very strongly, which was very unusual for a man, in that part of the world at that time.
Yeah. I have from page 8 in your book, and it says, he's talking to the reporter, and he says that the government for which I was the defense minister was unable to provide the security that people craved. There were many complicated forces working against us. One of them was Pakistan, like you just said before, and who first sent the Taliban to my country. By the way, in the beginning, the people hoped the Taliban would provide peace and safety. However, it did not take long for the Taliban to reveal its true intentions. So that's pretty powerful. I mean, they're like a gang of intolerant gang of thugs that is trying to impose an extreme form of Islam. I mean, it's amazing how you got all this down. Have you been over there? Or?
No, wow. No. I did a lot of research, and one of the people who has become a very dear friend of mine was one of Massoud's mujahideen. So he has been a valuable source of information. When the Soviets withdrew, Mirandan Rabbani and Massoud took over Kabul and tried to establish a government. The United States, who had been supporting them up until then, lost interest as soon as the Soviets withdrew and just pulled out, walked out, and said, "You guys are on your own." But they weren't ready to be on their own. And there was another warlord who's still around today, and Hekmatyar wanted very much to be a part of this brand new government. And when they didn't want him involved, he went to Pakistan, and Pakistan was supporting him, and it started this terrible civil war that cost millions of lives. and the country descended into chaos. And it was at that point in time that the Taliban, who were forming in Pakistan, came across the border into Kandahar and started to establish this control. And the people who were so desperate, first after years of war with the Soviets and then this civil war, the people were desperate for anybody who could bring them law and order. And at first, the Taliban seemed to offer that. Mm. Nobody knew in the beginning how that they were going to have ethnic cleansing, that they were going to do to women what they did, yeah. that they were going to become this totally oppressive, restrictive society. And by the time that the people realized they might not want the Taliban was already entrenched.
Yeah, it was too late.
And then, of course, they needed money and resources, and that was when they had this marriage of convenience with Al-Qaeda.
Yeah. Now, strangely enough, the United States actually was supportive of the Taliban during that, when the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan, and we kind of backdoored funded them, didn't we?
The Mujahideen.
Yeah.
Yeah, we trained people like, in addition to training and helping Massoud, we also trained Osama bin Laden. Mm-hmm.
And some of the weapons, too, I believe they got from the United States
as well.
Oh,
a lot,
yeah.
Sure. Sure, we didn't give them directly to them.
No,
we funneled them through Pakistan.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's amazing how we, you know, these problems that actually we help create come back and bite us, you know.
It's what the CIA calls blowback.
Yeah.
Is what we have over there today.
Yeah, it's a big blowback. Now, Afghanistan, a lot of people, you know, all the news is on Iraq, but now Afghanistan, from what I understand, they've slid back into this, the warlords, you know, dividing up the country again. It's pretty much, it's sliding back to what it was before.
It's pretty bad. Unfortunately, the Bush administration did not want to commit the troop level that was necessary to actually secure the country.
Yeah.
So we gave these local warlords a lot of munitions and a lot of money and subcontracted security out to them. So now they're not quite eager to give up the money and the power and the poppy fields because they like having their own little fiefdoms and kingdoms.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad, really. I mean, that the press, I mean, the press these last couple months really amazes me. We've got these 24-hour news channels that we filled up for weeks on end about Schiavo and then for weeks on end about the Pope. I mean, this other stuff does not come up to the surface. You know, where's the Afghanistan news? The only time we see Afghanistan is when Geraldo goes over there looking for the Al Capone's vault again, I think. You know what I mean?
Well, if an American troop gets killed, Afghanistan gets 5 minutes in the news that day.
Yeah.
But that really is about the end of it. There have been this series of kidnappings in Kandahar, child kidnappings.
Mm-hmm.
After the parents and the families pay the ransom, the kids are still killed.
Oh.
But we don't hear anything about that. If you don't go to Afghan news online and, you know, research and find out what's going on, you don't hear about any of it.
Which is really too bad. Yeah, well, and today I know they had some news that, what's his name, the guy's running that country now, supposedly.
Karzai,
he's asking for, he knows there's a problem because he's asking for a permanent United States bases over there as well. He knows there's, you know, problems, you know, you can bubble back up again because he's not stupid, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, Karzai, he's a good guy. Mm-hmm. The trouble is that he really is more the mayor of Kabul than he is the president of the country.
Yeah.
He can't leave the city, and he doesn't really have any control or influence in most parts of the country.
Mm. And I know they probably still do in parts of the opium. And I know, supposedly, what the United States is paying these crop growers to not grow the opium, correct?
Well, it's really curious, Sean. It's interesting. In the summer of 2001, Bush paid the Taliban $43 million because they did such a good job of eliminating poppy. And then we turned around and supplied these same poppy growers with the money that they needed basically to repopulate the fields with more poppy. So now heroin production is a huge problem over there again.
Amazing. You know, they won't do anything about it. I mean, we're down there in Colombia, you know, blowing up all these fields down there. Why don't we take care of the opium? Heroin's a lot more deadly than marijuana, you know?
Well, they talked about using something like almost like an Agent Orange on those poppy fields, but Karzai was afraid that, you know, too many civilians and too many innocent people would be hurt if they just, you know, did some kind of crop dusting. Then there was talk, and this might be a more interesting solution, a more creative solution. Right now, most of the world's legal heroin comes out of Turkey. if the pharma, and there's not enough, if the pharmaceutical companies would actually buy this product and use it for legalized morphine, heroin, all the byproducts that hospitals and doctors' office uses, it could actually become a legal crop.
Wow.
But I don't know, you know, it's so dangerous over there right now that they can't get companies to invest or do much of anything.
Yeah, I mean, the Afghani people, I mean, I remember when they first showed our troops going over there, they were so hopeful the United States was going to, you know, not going to leave them like that we did before, you know, and here we are, pretty much we're turning our backs on Afghanistan because all our attention's on Iraq.
Right. The Afghan people, you know, we don't hear about the only insurgents that we hear about in Afghanistan are the ones that are the Taliban and the Al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
The Afghan people actually still would like to have more Americans over there. They feel like we abandoned them once when we walked out after the Soviets withdrew.
Mm-hmm.
They were very hopeful that this time around we would actually do what we said we were going to do.
Yeah.
But and they would be a very good ally and friend and neighbor to us, but we're letting them down again.
Huh, it's too bad. Once again, I'm joined by Marianne T. Beverly. I'm Sean O'Mac. This is Subject to Discussion on LV Rocks. And we're talking about, she's an author. She's written a book about Muhammad. Oh, I got to get it straight. I have a cold, so I'm struggling a little bit.
Ahmed Shah Massoud.
Ahmed Shah Massoud. There you go. I got it straight. And talking about, you know, Afghanistan itself and how, you know, pretty much it's an ignored issue here in the news, which is it's really sad. We've committed so many American lives to that country and so much money of ours that we really should have some kind of a balanced view of that country, you know.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Afghanistan gets in a year what we spend in Iraq in about a week.
That's too bad.
And the irony of it is that Afghanistan doesn't have any infrastructure. They have 6% of the country has electricity. They don't have clean, safe drinking water. They don't have roads between their towns and cities. They have very, very little, and yet we are investing a fraction in Afghanistan what we're spending in Iraq.
Well, Iraq's got the oil. Afghanistan doesn't have oil, and I think our resources should be directed into that country because these people, they're suffering as it is. They keep suffering. If you suffer enough, that's how they turn into fanatics, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But for some reason, that message doesn't seem to be getting through.
I mean, it's really it's too bad. And I also want to talk about your being a webmistress for Edward James Olmos for a minute. Do you mind if I switch topics for a minute?
No, not at all.
Okay. And you're his webmistress. Have you met him?
Oh yeah.
You have. Okay. And how'd you come about being his webmistress? That'd be an interesting story.
Well. That story started back in the 80s.
Wow.
I was going to, speaking of Colombia, South America, I was going there to make a documentary movie about this. A friend, I have a school for mentally handicapped children, and he teaches his entire curriculum through the arts. And it's this amazing program, and Ricardo has amazing success with these kids. So I was getting ready to, I was fundraising and trying to get the money together to go down to South America. And Eddie was still doing Miami Vice at the time, and I knew that he did a lot of community service and public outreach types of work, and so I just wrote him a letter in care of NBC, and I told him what I was doing and asked him if he would be the host and the narrator for this documentary. So about a week and a half, 2 weeks later, he called me out of the clear blue sky. I was just stunned, and then I told him more about the documentary, and he agreed to help. So that was when it all started. That was when I first got to know him. But the webmistress was about 1999. He didn't have a website any longer, and so I originally just built a page for him as a birthday present, and sent the URL to him in a birthday card. And he called because he couldn't find the website. He was still learning about computers at the time.
Oh.
And Commander Adama didn't have a clue how to get to a website.
Yeah.
But he did eventually find it. And then just over the years, I became the web presence. And then about, 3 years ago, they just needed an official website. And so that's what I became at that time.
Wow. Now, have you gotten reaction from people, fans contacting you? I mean, what's, how do they feel about Edward James Olmos?
In general or Battlestar in particular?
Both.
Well, most people who take the time to write are fans,
mm-hmm.
and very devoted. They've been following his career for a long time.
Yes.
So that's always, you know, very popular email. And he's not only is he a wonderful actor, but he is an activist in the community. And so I get a lot of email from Latinos who are appreciative of what he does for the Latino community.
Mm-hmm.
Since the regular series of Battlestar Galactica started, and the email has been overwhelmingly supportive and very favorable.
Very good.
Unlike it was before the miniseries.
Yes, I think, yeah, you know, I've talked online about some of the, you know, him and I have a couple things in common with the threats and everything from the fans of the show and everything, or the old show, but it's amazing. He is really a remarkable man. I mean, I remember seeing stories when the big earthquake hit, he led an effort, a relief effort, you know, for the earthquake victims and everything
right.
else, and then...
after the L.A. riots, after
LA
the Rodney King riots, he was one of the first out there in the streets with a broom.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. And then the hurricane down in Florida, I believe he was also out in front. Not these recent ones, but the one that hit Homestead, I believe he was out there out front with the relief efforts. Because I believe it happened just right when Miami Vice was going off the air. But
and then he was, you know, he was down protesting the U.S. bombing in Vieques Island, and he even got arrested and had to go to jail for that.
Wow. So
what's so funny about him, Sean, is, you know, he picks these roles. Maybe it's just because actors choose. Good actors, at least, choose people that are as different from them as they usually can be. But he has this propensity to pick these rather dark, grim, stern characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people think that's the way he actually is, and they're surprised when they meet him because he is warm and funny. He has a wicked sense of humor.
It's what everybody says. I know Aaron Douglas, I had him on, and he says that he's one of the big jokesters up on the set, that when he knows he's going to do a scene up close to somebody, When he takes his lunch break, he eats a lot of tuna and onions, and he comes in with his bad breath.
Intentionally.
And Aaron Douglas, he was in a scene once with his bad breath. He goes, I was sweating. I was almost in tears because the breath was so bad. Yeah. But he's a remarkable man. I mean, and he's got really a wonderful family, Bodhi. And what's the other son? Miko?
Miko.
And,
mm-hmm.
So
then there are two adopted sons.
And mm-hmm. he's been married, three times, I believe?
Uh-huh.
Two, three times, but I mean, he's a remarkable man, and it's good he gives so much back. I mean, I just wish more of them would. More of these stars, can do that.
Yeah. Well, he seems determined to leave the world a better place than it was when he got here.
Absolutely.
I don't know anyone in my life that tries harder always to do the right thing than he does.
Well, I mean, he could do another right thing by picking up my series idea that I sent to him. So if he's listening, pick up my series, Edward James Olmos. You've read it.
Tell him the name of it, Glitter Gulch.
Glitter Gulch. You read it. It's a damn good show.
Yeah, it does. It sounds like fun.
Absolutely. And I got the other one I sent. I had two more I sent to him, so hopefully he'll pick them up. But anyway, getting back to your book, I just want to touch on, because the chat room was asking, touch on Edward James Olmos a little bit. Well, I mean, not him personally, but the topic of Edward James Olmos, But, and now getting back to Afghanistan. Now, like I said, the opium, first of all, we told him to stop growing it. Now, actually, we paid the money to grow the opium back again for the heroin. I mean, our foreign policy doesn't seem to make sense over there in Afghanistan.
There doesn't seem to have been a consistent policy.
Yeah.
It is the problem. And it doesn't matter who. This has been going on. Jimmy Carter started, the Soviet invasion occurred during the Carter administration.
Mm-hmm.
And he started supplying the Mujahideen, and then Reagan practically drowned them in aid.
Mm.
And then by the time the Soviets withdrew, Bush 41 was like, okay, they're done. Unfortunately, Clinton didn't pay the attention to them that he should have paid.
Yeah.
And this Bush isn't doing a whole heck of a lot better.
Huh. I mean, what solution could there be? Do we put more troops in there? We obviously have to pour more money into Afghanistan. I mean that's the root of the...
They would love more troops.
They would love it. I mean, if we pull them out of Iraq and put them into Afghanistan, I don't know, because we're drawing down the troops in Iraq slightly. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we're in a mess. I mean, there's... I don't know. Do we move them over? It's a big mystery.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they say, it's such a hard country to secure because of the mountains,
mm-hmm.
and that very well may be, but mm-hmm. that, I mean, even if we had secured the major cities, mm-hmm. but we didn't even do that. So,
no.
You know, you can't get from point A to point B. You can't get from Herat to Mazar-e-Sharif or Mazar-e-Sharif to Kandahar without taking your life in your hands.
Yeah, I mean, the only city we secured was Kabul, correct?
Right.
I mean, that's because it's the capital, and it's the, you know, the one we see on TV. And then the Taliban, I remember seeing those videos of the Taliban blowing up those holy sites in Afghanistan.
Oh, the Buddha,
well.
The Bamiyan, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was horrible. And then it seems like all of a sudden, as soon as Iraq came along, off it went. And, you know, Afghanistan didn't even exist anymore. Unless, like you said, unless something happens, unless, you know, a helicopter goes down or Geraldo goes over there or... I mean, it's sad, really. We got troops over there. I think we should pay some attention to Afghanistan. I don't know. Maybe
and,
I should start
Afghanistan.
And the troops
Afghanistan are doing some really good stuff. They're trying so hard. They're you know, going into small towns, and they are trying to help the people get rebuilt, and they're trying to get medical facilities in there, and sometimes just a well dug and schools built. This friend of mine donated land, and the Army PRT built a school that the girls use half a day and the boys use half a day. So they are trying to do things, but there's a lot more that needs to be done, and unfortunately they're not getting it's like it's becoming the forgotten war.
Yeah, now where'd you get your inspiration to write this book, Lion? I mean,
where'd
you get the inspiration to write this book, Lion?
I spent a lot of time researching.
Really?
My husband would laugh because he would come home and I'd have my nose buried in a Jane's Defense Weekly or some military special ops magazine, you know, American Soldier, and I read a lot of books on the Soviet invasion. There's a lot of material out there, mm-hmm. but you have to really go out and look for it.
Now, you felt that you know, this would make a great book, and you know, did you have a who's your publisher?
It's Neshwi. It's a small press in St. Louis, Missouri.
Huh. And then, I mean, you just felt, there's a niche for a book to talk about, you know, him. I mean, I'm just fascinated how authors come up with their ideas for books and actually put, you know, pen to paper, and then it goes from there to the publisher. I mean, isn't it amazing?
Well,
it's a hard process.
The interesting thing about this one, I had never heard of this man like most of the people in the West. Mm-hmm. I had not even heard of him. It was almost 2 months to the day after he was assassinated, and I was at my doctor's office out in the waiting room, and I picked up a National Geographic Explorer magazine. I was just flipping through the pages, and I saw a picture of this man, and I had this instantaneous gut reaction of, I know you.
Hmm.
And it was such a strong feeling of recognition that I borrowed the magazine. Honestly, I thought, you know, I must have met this man somewhere. I was just certain that I knew him. So I came home and put his name, Googled his name, and of course realized right away that there was no way I could have met him. But that connection was so strong, I just kept researching and researching and reading more and learning more. And then all of a sudden this idea that here was this extraordinary man that most of the world had never heard about. And I really wanted to... I wanted his name to get known outside of Afghanistan and outside of the CIA and other certain select circles.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been reading the book. It's just incredible, the story you tell. I mean, the man, you know, I didn't know who he was until I read about him on your site. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. Any plans maybe to turn this book into a movie?
Well, I'm trying to do a screen adaptation with that hope in mind,
Wow.
And believe, who would be my very first choice to portray Massoud in the movie?
Edward James Olmos?
Absolutely.
I
think they have a lot in common personality-wise.
Yeah, Massoud was how old when he died? He was what?
He was 49.
Yeah, but Edward Olmos, isn't he a little, I don't want to say old, you know, OLD for the role?
He's 58.
How about his son? He could play a younger version of him. How about
Bodhi?
I
would love it if Bodhi played the younger version, absolutely.
Go.
When they did flashback scenes or something.
Yeah, that'd be good. Or, you know, or something. Or how's the other son? Maybe he could put Miko, huh?
You Miko?
Yeah.
I don't know,
but still, maybe... I mean, they got a production company. Hey, why not? I mean, it would be a heck of a movie. I mean, you have any plans to turn to a TV movie or a theatrical?
My agent is going to shop it to both studios, TV studios, and movie studios.
Wow, very good. And are you working on how many books have you written?
Well, this is the first one that's been published. Oh. I have a lot others that I'm getting ready to dump on my poor agent.
Wow. And then, now, Lion, people, if they want to buy it, they can go to Amazon. Is it available off Amazon.com?
Yeah, it's at Amazon.com.
Great. And they click on Lion, right? Put Lion in the title?
Lion. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Very good.
That's because they called Masood the Lion of Panjshir.
Yeah. Now, we only got a couple minutes left, but what fact that it stunned you about him that you'd like us to know before we let you go? What about him?
Just that he was this amazing man who would have, without the Soviet invasion, would have chosen to live his life in peace and quiet. He was a very humble man. He wanted to create beautiful things in Afghanistan. You know how that old saying that sometimes that people are either born great or achieve greatness or have greatness thrust upon them? I think he was all three of those things. He might have been great in peace by some other amazing accomplishment, but when war came out of nowhere, he found something inside himself that he didn't even know existed. And he gave his life, all of it, for his people, for his country, and for what he believed, for, you know, in God and in freedom and peace and all of those things that we cherish so much.
Huh. It's an amazing story. I mean, I just wish our American news media would get their, split up their news day, their 24-hour news set, because I know it's kind of hard to fill up those 24 hours with other news than, the Pope and Schiavo, but, I wish they'd talk about other things like what's going on in Afghanistan. I mean, it seems like it's really been a neglected story for so long.
Yeah, occasionally I'll email CNN and MSNBC and say, hey, guys, what's happening in Afghanistan? But don't usually hear anything about it.
No, I mean, it's like, all these news channels, they have bureaus in Baghdad, but, there's no bureau in, in Kabul. Hello,
right.
You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. This is the producer's drunk or something. I don't know what happened here. But anyway, it's just that they have all these news channels. They got another one with the Al Gore runs coming up. You think they could devote some time to this issue of Afghanistan? You there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay, it's a major country. Like I said, we have resources in there. It'd be nice to know what's going on over there.
Well, it would be nice. We've had American bloodshed in that country in the last couple of years, in the last couple of months, and it would be nice if somebody remembered.
Yeah. But I hope so, hopefully. Well, Marianne T. Beverly, we're going to let you go, and I appreciate you coming on to the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Sean.
No problem. Do you have a website address to give out to the listeners?
Is it
a long one?
Which one? For Eddie, it's old America Online. It's AOL.com/MBEVE10258/EddieAlmos.html. And the other one is all that same MBEV stuff. And then /Masood.html.
And also, you could buy her book off of Amazon.com.
Right.
Subject search Lion, right? And look for your name, and also look for the gentleman's name as well. So
yes.
Hopefully we can sell you some books here.
Hey, Sean, before we get off, I wanted to say thanks to you.
Oh, you're welcome.
And I also wanted to thank Mike Hinman over at Sci-Fi Portal for this. For your Battlestar Galactica Emmy campaign.
Oh, that's right. He said
and Eddie is just so, he's tickled pink about it.
Yes. We're on a campaign to get the series some Emmy nominations. And those of you who want to help out, go to Sci-Fi Portal, SYFIPortal.com, and click on there. You can make a donation. I think it's up to $929.99 to get the show some Emmy nods. So, anyway, Marianne, we'll let you go.
Okay,
right.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
And bye-bye. That was Marianne T. Beverly, author of Lion, and about Ahmad Shah Massoud, who was apparently a freedom fighter over in Afghanistan, which, I didn't know they existed until I read it off her site. And then supposed to be getting a call next by Maureen Ryan from the Chicago Tribune to give us her Battlestar Galactica update, and because she interviewed the writers of the first two episodes of the new season, and I asked her to call in to give us an update, but if not, I'll just meander through the news. And next week, I'll be joined by the Peoria Pundit blogger. He'll be on, and his name is Bill, and he'll be on with us next week. He's from Peoria, Illinois, and it doesn't play in Peoria. It doesn't play anywhere, right? And last week's Battlestar Galactica rerun to the 0.95 rating, which is, it dropped quite a bit because first of all, you know, it's reruns. Second of all, you could watch the episode unedited and uncut off the website. And so, but still, it did pretty well considering it's a rerun. And then they had an interview with Mary McDonnell from the Dreamwatch magazine. And it's going to be out April 12th, which is yesterday. And she reflects on season one. She can understand why some people didn't think season one would could maintain the same level of quality as a miniseries. But the cast did not have any doubt. They trusted Ron Moore's vision. On her character, she says, what's interesting is that Laura has become a woman who has nothing to lose. Her illness hasn't forced her into a place of fear. And she's allowed her to become clearer, stronger, and faster. But as I said, when the show first started, she was like the hesitant president. And since then, she's grown into the role as the president, a female president. And in the future, I really don't know what's coming up. I do know I feel very excited about it based on the collaboration she experienced with Ron and David Icke and a team of writers during season one. She can't wait to see what they come up with for season two. And so, it's a good little interview from Mary McDonnell. It'd be nice to have her come on the program. Anybody have any juice there with Mary McDonnell, let me know. This is from Michael Hidman from Sci-Fi Portal. He says, Galactica leads the genre awards field with 12 nominations. Beginning April 12th for the sixth time, fans visiting Sci-Fi Portal will be able to choose their favorites of television and movies in the past year, the most annual sci-fi genre awards. The best overall record this year is Galactica, which is leading the pack with 12 nominations, including Best Actor and Best Actress nods for Olmos and Mary McDonnell. James Callis and Michael Hogan, Baltar and Ty, are competing for Best Supporting Actor. Kitty Sackhoff, Tricia Helfer, and Grace Park are also competing for Best Supporting Actress. And some of the others from Lost, with Matthew Fox is on there. He's up for Best Actor. Stargate combined for 9 nominations. SG-1, Amanda Tapping is competing for Best Actress. So voting begins April 25th and runs through May 25th. The winners be announced May 31st. And visitors go to Sci-Fi Portal to cast their vote and also to give a donation to help the Galactica get an Emmy campaign. And what else do we have? That's it from Galactica. I haven't got any Maureen Ryan updates, so I don't know where she's at. But anyway, and then next week they're going to run Water on Friday night. And it's gonna, of course, we remember last time around it was the second part of the season opener. And now if you're watching the rerun of the first season, you see how the God business weeds its way throughout the whole series, which I thought was incredible. Now you know how it ended. Going back and watching the beginning, it's fascinating to see how the story unfolds. So it's like a book. You know, every week was another turn in the page. And, of course, tonight, I really want to talk to Marie Ryan because I want to talk about that show Revelations that's going to be on tonight. That Catholic nun and that scientist, Brian Pullman's, or Pillman, whatever it is. And that's supposed to be an outstanding show. And we're going to be joined by the host of, what a host of Tap Out, Rolando Cruz.
She is hot, that lady, that girl.
The nun?
Dude, she is. That Nicole, whatever her name
hit
is.
By lightning.
What?
You're going to hit by lightning.
No, man. I sat through Solaris just so I can watch her.
But, I mean, it's supposed to be a good show. I mean, I might do a marathon of Revelation shows now.
Oh, I'm here, man.
No, I know. I'm not going to do that. But, I mean, it's supposed to be a good series. And I was hoping to hear Maureen Ryan to talk about that. She's the television writer for the Chicago Tribune. Maybe she's predisposed and could not come on this meager internet radio show. But... what else is going on with Galactica? We got Mary McDonnell and Katie Sackhoff is on their interview. I just don't think it should be at the Rio. I mean, it just.
But why not?
They'd walk around with nothing
they
on.
They have a show there called Eroctica.
I know.
Yeah.
I know, but
don't they have it at the Rio, right?
And they steal the name Eroctica.
Oh, yeah. I just.
And the Tropicana has an erotic bird show.
And they got the Titanic.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's
they
exotic.
They got the Titanic display, too. I just don't think the Rio is my own thing. I just don't think they should be hosting that convention at the Rio.
But why not?
Because they got people running around with vibrators in the hallways of the casino and everything. It's ridiculous. There you got security. He's got to say, hey, put that stuff away. Go down to the convention.
They should hand out paper bags.
Don't be trotting that stuff out in the casino.
They should hand out paper bags
or some kind of thing where these kids should not be seeing this stuff walking around the casino. Because these women are running around with hardly nothing on. You know, I find it appealing. But, it gets these kids and stuff walking around. And it's just, I don't think the hotel should be hosting
that. Yeah, but
if
you're taking a kid to the casino and running around in the casino,
Yeah, but the last thing you expect is somebody sticking a vibrator in your face if you're a 6-year-old kid.
But there's nothing for kids to do in there. Well, the masquerade, this guy.
Yeah. But I mean, a lot of them are staying there. It's just my feeling is they shouldn't be doing that. But anyway, we got about 2 minutes left, so I'll start wrapping up. Like I say, next week we're gonna have the Peoria pundit that's gonna be on from Illinois. His name is Bill, and it'll be interesting to get back into the bloggers a little bit. I thought this is a nice show to bridge between the Galactica shows and the old blogger show. So Marianne was quite a good guest talking about Afghanistan and how we're neglecting the news that's going on over there unless something happens. You know, like now, so we had that helicopter goes down and killed, 16 troops? That gets on the news, but nothing in Afghanistan gets on the news, which is amazing. You know, so I just need to focus more on that. We got money. So we got money. We got troops in there. Where's the news about what's going on?
Hey, you want to hear something interesting? Do you remember on, I think it was like Fox News or something like that, they had a guy from, that's in Iraq, they had this Pikachu doll that Rumsfeld held, and there's like a bunch of like
really
famous people. Selling them?
They selling them?
No. I'm just saying though that Nikki knows the guy. His mom works with Nikki, and
wow.
The guy came back home and he brought a DVD with a bunch of pictures, and they all have the Pikachu thing in it. It's awesome. It's really funny.
And Rumsfeld is over there too.
Rumsfeld, the guy has a picture with the Pikachu doll in the palace where Saddam Hussein used to be.
It's amazing. Amazing. Yeah, and Bush sent Rumsfeld back over to Iraq. Did he go to Afghanistan? I don't think so. I don't know. I just say these 24-hour news channels got to get their heads out of their asses and realize they got 24 hours to fill the news programs. Why are we focusing so much on the Pope? How much just on Schiavo? Got all this other stuff going on. Where's the news? Right?
Schiavo. The Pope.
No,
the news?
I mean, where's the news about Afghanistan? Where's the news about everything else? No, we're gonna talk about Britney Spears being pregnant. That's breaking news.
That is breaking news.
I mean, it's just nuts.
Dude, it's all ratings, though. I mean, you can't blame them.
I start my own
not
news channel.
Yeah, and you'll have better Star Galactica all the time.
But I mean, I only got
and then
one,
everybody would criticize you for
it's
it.
It's only 1 hour. They got 24 hours to fill. Why don't they fill it with news from around the world like they're supposed to?
They need to make that cable news nudity network.
The new network, Naked
News.
The news now.
News, yeah.
There
you
is
go.
On there.
And they need to make it a cable network. It'll blow all these other cable news networks out of the water.
And Al Gore needs to hopefully his news channel is going to be the Current. It's going to be called Current. Hopefully,
Al Gore invented the internet.
You missed cable news network. You missed our show a couple days ago. Someone sent us a URL with the news network, a little video clip.
For Current.
And she's reading the news. She's an Oriental lady reading the news.
Naked.
And well, she's not. I guess she is naked, but you don't see anything. You just see her face because she's reading. And she, how can I put this politely? She gets
jiggy with it.
No, she gets
excited.
No, she gets a few facials while reading the news.
Oh man.
And she's—I swear to God.
Okay, that went way over my head. Now, what are you talking about?
She got a pearl necklace. You mean, right?
Well, she got money shot.
Oh, no.
She's reading the news,
oh,
and she'll turn her head.
No.
She gets a money shot, and then she just continues reading, and
Lord.
It's like dripping from her face.
No, she's not.
I swear to God.
Oh.
On that note, it's time for me to say goodbye.
Pretty shake.
See you next week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. The website is subject2discussion.com. Email is seanomacradio@yahoo.com.
Did you change your email for the third time?
No, it's the same one. seanomacradio@yahoo.com. Easier than the SMDUWF. It's harder.
Why don't you just change the name of the show to Sean O'Mac Radio?
Yeah, I'll change the website though. I'm too cheap. Huh? No, Sean O'Mac Radio.
I'm the one who bought the damn thing for
Diggs,
him.
Oh.
I bought the URL for him.
Then Diggs will have to redo the graphic.
Oh no.
I'll leave it as it is. Anyway, Sob Lofton is next, and then tomorrow is Daily Noise with Jimmy Diggs and Con Solar, and Tap Out is Sunday. And for those of you, and then also Spank Wagon is Friday from 6 to 8, followed by the dude with the long hair, King Hesh, right? Do you know him?
No, I don't.
Dude. Anyway, see you next week. Good night, and have a pleasant tomorrow. Dude.